People say less is more. At Red Barn, we think less is better. It's what you won't find that sets our natural premium pet food apart. No byproducts, no corn or soy, no fillers. Just the natural ingredients your pets need to live the healthy life they deserve. Look at the label. We want you to. Red Barn Naturals Pet Food. Simply the best. Find it in your local pet specialty store. Visit redbarninc.com/coupon to save a dollar off your first can.
From two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska, this is The Side Vibe, brought to you by Dogworks Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dogworks Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Side Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming, and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood sides on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
This is Robert Forto hosting from Willow, Alaska in the beautiful snow. We finally got snow in mid-March. Haven't seen any since January up here, and we're happy that it's here and we're able to mush some dogs this weekend. Calling in from the Hudson Valley of New York is our host, Dorothy Wills Raftery. Dorothy, how's it going?
Hi, Robert. Happy first day of spring. I know it is for many in our listening areas. Excuse me. We have really basically had no snow this season, so I'm enjoying your photos. It's been a very unusual winter.
It has, but you know, El Nino or whoever it is, I think they are going to, about time for them to move on. What do you think?
I think so, too, because at this rate, I'm afraid we're going to get snow in July.
So, very good. So, what's been going on there at the Five Sides household? I know this is a very special show for you over the last 4 or 5 years that we've been on the air. This is probably one of the most important shows that you have when you talk about canine epilepsy and the Purple Day. Is that right?
That is correct. Robert, there's lots of things to talk about because it's our annual Purple Day for Epilepsy show. That is always on March 26th, so that's coming up in a few days. And I have a few things I want to let our listeners know about, ways they can participate and help spread awareness for epilepsy and canine epilepsy. First, though, I just want to mention with spring also arrives the Vernal Equinox Siberian Husky Memorial Candle Ceremony, and that's going to take place tonight, March 20th, at 8 p.m. And Robert, that's everyone's time zone. That's so that this way there will be a continuous lighting of candles around the world for the Siberian Huskies who have gone north of the Rainbow Bridge. And this year, on the list of remembrances is my beloved Gibson, who, as we know, is the face of our Live Give Strong Canine Epilepsy Awareness Campaign, for which today's show is part of, for Purple Day. So at 8 p.m. tonight, everyone's time, all those who have lost a fur baby or wish to honor Siberian Huskies who have earned their silver harness, please light a candle. For more information, you can visit the CyberNet website, and it's at www.cybernet, and that's cybernet.com/memorial/listall, and that's listall.php, and that's Peter Harry Peter. There's also a beautiful Rainbow Bridge memorial video that also includes Gibson. We were honored to have him part of that. And that's over on the Peaches and Paprika channel on YouTube. So you can pop over and check that out. I will tell you it's a little bit of a tissue alert, but it is very beautiful, touching remembrance. Now, Robert, today is my first canine epilepsy show without my partner, Gibson. And as you know, he was an epidog, canine epileptic. And a lot of our listeners and readers know that shortly after his third birthday, he was diagnosed with idiopathic canine epilepsy. Gibson faced many challenges from side effects of his medication that we did conquer. He was truly an inspirational dog, and he was a very happy dog. He suddenly earned his wings, and I can't guarantee I won't break up a little bit during this show. He suddenly earned his wings this past December, and it was not from canine epilepsy, but rather from cancer that had spread throughout him, and it was discovered only when our vet went in to do a spleen removal. Gibson had lived for 7 years seizure-free. We were able to manage it, and as you and a lot of our listeners know, I used a combination of medicine and alternative treatments for him, but that is like a huge, you know, success. And it's a strange feeling to be looking back now. As any epi dog parent can tell you, each hour of each day that turns into a week, then a month, then more, is really a huge success. And stress, because, you know, you do worry. You worry all the time. And, you know, you try to push it out of your mind, and as each day goes by, you feel a little bit better. But, you know, you're always worried. One of my vets once told me, just let him live his life. And that really resonated with me, and that's what I did. And he surely did. Anyone who follows our Five Sides blog or, you know, over on social media, they know Gib was a happy, silly boy. I mean, he was really a character. And, you know, he showed me joy in life, even when the going gets tough. And if there was a dog, Robert, who wanted to live forever, it was definitely Gibson. I'm still in shock, but I am going to carry on his Live Gib Strong message, because epilepsy did not define him. Life did. Which definitely brings us to today's very special show. March 26th is Purple Day, as we stated, for epilepsy. And canine epilepsy is the topic for this episode. A little about the origins of the day is that in 2008, motivated by her own epilepsy, a young girl named Cassidy Megan started the idea of Purple Day. What was her idea? To just get people talking about epilepsy, to know that they're not alone, to dispel any myths or misconceptions about epilepsy. The Epilepsy Association of Nova Scotia came on board in 2008 to help her further develop her concept. And in 2009, the New York-based Anita Kaufman Foundation and Epilepsy Association of Nova Scotia joined forces to launch Purple Day internationally. And, you know, you can read more about that over at purpleday.org. And on March 26th, everyone is encouraged to go purple, wear something purple, bake something purple to share, turn your social media sites purple. And this is all an effort to get people talking about epilepsy. Now, we here at Five Sides dedicate ourselves in Gibson's name to canine epilepsy, and we'll continue to focus our awareness education on it. This year, we are once again hosting a Purple Day blog hop that I first began last year. And our Five Sides co-host is Confessions of a Rescue Mom blogger, Kimberly Matcham, whose dog Rolo is also an epi dog. And together they do a lot of awareness up in Canada. We have a Facebook event we hope folks will visit that contains not only info on how to join our Purple Day blog hop, and it's actually a blog hop and a social media share, but also articles and broadcasts on canine epilepsy, and we invite folks to share their Purple Day photos of any breed of dog who is living with canine epilepsy and or a seizure disorder. Come check us out over on Facebook, and we are the, if you're going to do a search on Facebook, you just put in Purple Day for Epilepsy 2016, and you'll see our Five Sides and Confessions of a Rescue Mom purple banner across the top that says March 26th Epilepsy Awareness Day. Robert, I'd like just to give a quick reminder to viewers that both of my books on canine epilepsy, The Epic Dog Tales, Heartfelt Stories of Amazing Dogs Living and Loving Life with Canine Epilepsy, and What's Wrong with Gibson, Learning About Canine Epilepsy, have a portion of sales donated to the Canine Epilepsy Resources Epple Canine Foundation's Emma's Seizure Fund. That's through the North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. Both of those books can be purchased online at our publishing site at arctichousepublishing.com. On
good
today's
stuff,
show,
Dorothy. I'm glad.
Sorry, what's that?
I was just going to comment very quickly on your tireless work that you do on this canine epilepsy campaign. You know, for folks that follow Dorothy, you guys know how passionate she is about this. And if you don't, you know, if you want information, if you're kind of, you know, wondering what's going on with your dog, Dorothy is definitely a resource that you need to have on your list. Dorothy, how can folks get in touch with you? I know you have lots of resources that you pass along, but how can folks get in touch with you if they're just beginning this, you know, this journey with canine epilepsy or possible diagnosis and, you know, things of the such?
Yes. You know, Robert, right now I'm actually getting the finishing touches on a website, and that's going to actually become the go-to spot for us that will break everything down to. I'm going to have an extensive epilepsy library on there, so that'll be there. We'll have things on this show, the Sci-Vibe, as well as my Five Sci-Vibes blog. So that's going to be fivesci-vibes.com, and I'm told that we're almost there. So hopefully this month we'll be launching it, so folks can just make a little sidebar note of that. But right now the best way would be I probably keep a lot going on our Facebook page, which is Five Sci-Vibes Siberian Husky Canine News and Reviews, and that is in conjunction with our blog, which is fivesci-vibes.blogspot.com. And those are really the two best ways to get in touch with us at this point. And then I'll certainly be announcing when the website comes out, and then that will be an easier route for everybody to try to get the information. I will be putting up my articles, different articles, PDFs, links to various resources, so this way they can actually have an online library where they can get help when they need it. And, of course, they can always drop me an email, fivesci-vibes@gmail.com, and I'd be more than happy to assist them.
And not just for Siberians. We want to make that clear. This is for anybody with any dog, right?
Yes. Epilepsy is not just a Siberian Husky issue. Epilepsy affects dogs across the breeds, across the world. And when we talk canine epilepsy, we are talking all breeds.
Very good. So let's talk about today's show. Who is our guest and what are we talking about?
Yes. Today's show, which Gibson, I know you're out there, so I'm dedicating it to you. We'll be talking all about, as we said, canine epilepsy and the dogs who have seizures. And we're going to be talking with Willard Moore, and he is the founder of the Molly's Canine Epilepsy Outreach Program. He's with the Epilepsy Outreach Program and also with Molly's Fund. He had a dog named Molly, and she was an English setter, and she was an epi dog. They are now located in North Carolina, but Willard grew up on a multi-generational farm with a love of animals, especially dogs. After graduating from North Carolina State University in 1970 with a degree in forestry, Willard became a pilot with the United States Air Force and was shipped to Vietnam. After the war, he returned home to the United States, and it wasn't until after his retirement in 2006 that he had the time to once again add a dog to his family. Enter Molly. Willard found Molly on PetFinder.com and adopted her from a shelter. Shortly after, however, Molly started having seizures and was diagnosed with idiopathic epilepsy and placed on anti-epileptic drugs, or AEDs. A lot of times folks will see all in caps AEDs, and that's what it stands for. After Molly's passing, Willard was determined to keep her memory alive while bringing information to others about dogs with seizures. He began to attend various events, and he set up informational booths at each, passing out information on epilepsy, sharing Molly's story, and also collecting donations for the Molly's Fund, and that's housed at the North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. For a decade, Willard, with the help from his wife and current English setter Maggie, he's been attending hundreds of animal events, passing out literature on canine epilepsy, and speaking with thousands of people, and undertaking all of his own in order to help other families who may be faced with a dog having seizures. Willard, welcome to the Sci-Vibe.
Thanks for the invitation, Dorothy. It's a privilege to be here.
It's such a pleasure to have you here with us today. I was hoping maybe you can begin a little bit with Molly's story. How old was she when you found her on PetFinder and adopted her?
Well, when I found Molly on PetFinder and went out to the animal shelter to see her, they told me that the administrators out there told me she was about 4.5 years old. So, and that was the first May 1st of 2006. That information, I guess, was given to them by whoever it was that turned Molly into the shelter. And, of course, we really don't know why Molly ended up in the shelter, but we have our suspicions that perhaps Molly was having episodes and the owners just decided that they couldn't deal with it. So we really don't know.
Now, how soon after did she begin to have seizures once she came home with you?
So I brought Molly home the first week in May of 2006, and it was about a month later on June 6th that we witnessed for the first time a grand mal epileptic seizure, and it was a pretty scary thing to have to see. We didn't know anything about canine epilepsy at the time, and I'd never known anybody human with epilepsy, so I really had no idea what was happening in front of me.
Yeah, that is, I think as all of us who have witnessed our dogs having it, it is an extremely scary thing to watch. I know with Gibson, I too at that time when he first started knew nothing about epilepsy. I don't even think I realized dogs could get epilepsy, and I came in when he was full seizure, then he had gone stiff and stopped breathing, and I was on the phone with the vet, and I really thought I lost him at the time. So it's an extremely frightening thing for anybody to go through, and I think that's a lot of what you and I both do is we want to kind of pay it forward and let people out there know that, you know, we're here, we understand, they're not alone. It is a scary thing, but you can, you know, you can get through it with support from others. I was lucky that a gal who was a nurse in Texas reached out to me through social media. I had posted something at that time on MySpace. I wasn't very active on a lot of social media at that time, and she answered me right away and, you know, got in contact with me, and we touched base offline, and she just really guided me through everything because she still has an epi dog. Hi, Max. But Lori was a terrific help to me, and I knew after that I wanted to start talking about it and letting other people know that we're here, because that made such a difference to me to have someone help through that, because it is so scary. And we know epilepsy can be a genetic trait. Sometimes, however, if a dog is a rescue dog, their history can be a mystery, as you were saying. Molly was diagnosed with idiopathic canine epilepsy, meaning no known cause, and placed on medication. What did they put her on?
Well, Molly first started on phenobarbital when she was diagnosed with idiopathic epilepsy, and at the time we had no idea what idiopathic epilepsy meant or what it was. The doctor told us to, he prescribed 30 milligram pills of phenobarbital, and she had to take those twice a day. So it'd be one pill twice a day. She continued that prescription, and then it was up to a couple weeks later when she had another cluster of grand mal seizures. So we started out on phenobarbital, and the medications that she was on, her phenobarbital kept getting bumped up to try to stop the seizures, and we ended up with other medications that I can certainly tell you about a little bit later on. But that's how we started out.
How long did Molly go in between seizures?
Well, the longest time Molly was without seizures was about 25 days. I tried to keep a rough log of it. But on the average, her clusters of grand mal seizures were about every 2 weeks. And they would be hopefully not more than about two. We had other medication that we were needing to give her. On her second trip to the veterinary specialty hospital, which was about a couple of weeks after the first cluster of grand mal seizures, I asked these people, what can be done in the meantime? This new medication, phenobarbital, doesn't seem to be helping a whole lot. And they bumped up the dosage. And in addition to that, her second time out to the specialty hospital for an overnight stay, they handed me a quart freezer bag and said, this is what you're going to have to do in the meanwhile, so that you don't have to keep bringing her back here, and hopefully this second medication will work. And in that quart freezer bag was a piece of rubber hose, two syringes, several packets of surgical lubricant, and a rubber hose.
And what was that for, and the medication that they gave you with that? Because I can imagine having that handed to you and not being well-versed or knowing anything about it.
Well,
I would be looking at the bag going, oh, my God.
Yeah, well, the also in that bag was a vial of Valium. And what I was going to have to do was learn how to administer liquid rectal Valium to my dog, because they told me that the liquid would be absorbed by their large intestine a lot quicker than suppositories or a pill. So we got pretty handy with that.
Now, we had talked before about how frightening it is witnessing our dogs having seizures. Well, can you walk us through, you know, Molly's first seizure, you know, from the first stages until you were able to go to the vet? Because I think it would just help for people to, you know, hear.
Right. Well, Molly's first, the first time we witnessed these grand mal seizures was on June 6th, which I say was about a month after we brought her home. And it was about time for Molly to go to bed in her crate, and we always gave Molly a Milk-Bone biscuit before she went in her crate because we wanted the crate to be a happy place.
Mm-hmm.
She took the Milk-Bone biscuit from my hand and walked across the room and started to eat the Milk-Bone biscuit, at which time she let out a terrible scream. Stood up on her hind legs, kind of like the Lone Ranger's horse, fell off to her right side. On her right side, her tail and hind legs were straight out behind her. Her front legs were doing the doggy paddle, and her jaw was just snapping open and closed, open and closed. And I thought my new pal was choking on a piece of the Milk-Bone biscuit that I'd just given her, so... I quick ran over to the dog, and it's a good thing I didn't stick my fingers in her mouth to try to see if there's anything in there, because surely she would have bit my fingers off. My wife then hustled to the telephone and called our veterinarian telephone number, but at 10 o'clock at night, what we got was an information loop that directed us to a nearby 24/7 emergency animal hospital. She had another seizure in the car on the way over there, and then a third seizure on the front sidewalk in front of the building, and I had to get an orderly to come out and help me get her in the building because I had no idea what was going on. So it was a pretty scary time, and we got Molly checked into the specialty hospital over there, and she spent the night. We, of course, came home and then started to try to learn as much as we could about canine epilepsy. Well, we didn't know what she had at the time. But we came home, and when we picked her up the next day, we found out that she had been diagnosed with idiopathic canine epilepsy. At that time, we had a name to call it, and we tried to start learning as much as we could about this.
Right, which is a very good point, even for folks today, you know, to become your own dog's advocate and try to get out there and learn as much as you possibly can, because I do think information is key, and it also helps remove some of the fear, gives you a little bit of background so that when you're talking to your vet, you're having, you know, a conversation that's understandable, you know, and that's very important. You also mentioned earlier about a log, and I just want to take a couple minutes and talk about how important keeping a log or journal is. You had mentioned that you jotted down her seizures and what type of seizures, right, in a log?
Yeah, I did. We thought that that would be helpful, and I think probably the veterinarian that released Molly to me at the hospital when we went to pick her up had probably suggested keeping some kind of notes on her seizures and her good times and so forth, so that it would probably help the veterinarians do a little bit better job, perhaps, of helping us out with medication and knowing just how bad this could be.
Right, and for folks listening, a log or a journal is a very good thing to do. I know sometimes when your dog's having a seizure, you're thinking, I can't write something down. But, you know, now we have phones that have video cameras. Just click it on, even if you make a video journal of it, and then you can always mark down afterwards approximately when the dog went into a seizure, how long it was, you know, for him to come out. And also things that he was doing or maybe eating, like up to 24 hours before. There are so many different triggers, and again, a lot of dogs are diagnosed idiopathic because we can't always trace it back to a cause, but it's a good place to start, and it's a good book to have, you know, keep that journal so that you do have these conversations with your vet, and it helps them tremendously, I think, in trying to help with your dog. Now, did Molly get side effects from her medications? And if so, what were they like?
I don't remember any side effects. I don't have any notes on specific side effects for the phenobarbital. I do remember that she was seemed to be thirsty an awful lot. And when she was thirsty a lot, of course, I tried to keep her thirst quenched. And that meant that she needed more trips outside.
Uh-huh.
And Molly would give me about a 15-minute warning. She'd start barking when it was time to go outside, and if I didn't make it within 15 minutes, then I'd have more laundry to do.
That was the "Daddy, we got to go now" call.
Yeah, that was it. That was the warning I got. It was about 15 minutes worth of warning. And I ended up doing quite a bit of laundry because I wasn't always within earshot of her barking if I happened to be out in the yard or walking to the mailbox or busy doing something else. But it was pretty regular.
Now, you also mentioned that on the AED, she was, and I'm going to quote you here, she was acting like a drunk old lady, which is something I think describes a dog on these kind of medications perfectly. I know Gibson was very drunk-like for several weeks after he was placed on phenobarbital, and he was also on potassium bromide, and he became extremely lethargic. It increased his appetite. I agree with the thirst. He was always thirsty. To this day, I can hear, because he was lethargic, Gibson did a lot of things and taught himself how to get a lot of things while laying down. He could scooch, and he was a 100-pound husky, a woolly husky, so he wasn't a small husky. And he would scooch himself and reach his paw out, and he would pull, and I have a huge stainless steel water dish because of five of them, and he would pull it, and he would get it close enough so he could get it with his teeth, and then he would take his teeth and pull it. And I can still right now hear the thump, 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 thump of him drinking out of the water dish because he drank a lot. So that definitely is something what you had mentioned as well. And he also wound up getting a very increased appetite, which I had to find healthy ways of filling him up, because at first the appetite, he wound up putting on 20 pounds and he became a 120-pound husky. And, you know, your typical male husky is around 70 pounds. So I wound up adding some healthy things, such as green beans and pure pumpkin puree. And I was able to, over a period of 2 years, get his weight back down to a normal weight. But you also mentioned that to me that Molly had an increased appetite. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I can. Well, on the phenobarbital, the dogs have to have blood work done every so often to make sure that the phenobarbital is not to the point of destroying their liver.
Mm-hmm.
And Molly was doing pretty good with her blood work up until the end of August. And at that point, our veterinarian told us that she was going to have to prescribe for Molly additionally potassium bromide. And that was supposed to help with the seizures. And at that point, her phenobarbital dosages were not increased anymore. So the potassium bromide was an addition to her daily phenobarbital medication. And when our vet prescribed initially the potassium bromide medication, it had to be made up at a local formulary. And our vet told me that she says, "Don't be surprised now. Molly's going to be acting like a drunk old lady until her body starts getting a little bit more used to this potassium bromide."
Uh-huh.
Yes, she was. She got to be real hungry. I tried to help satisfy this hunger with carrots. Molly liked carrots pretty good. And I'd nuke them in the microwave and cut them up in pieces. And I always seemed like I was always carrying around a bag of soft carrots in my pocket when we were outside. She liked apples as well. And if the apples and the carrots weren't satisfying her, she would go off into the woods. And I could say here that I fenced in my backyard for Molly. It's about a third of an acre fenced, and that fenced-in area includes a grassy area as well as a wooded area. Because English setters like to sniff and constantly hunting for something, I figured she'd enjoy the wooded part of the backyard. And she would go out into the wooded part of the backyard and start tearing bark off of fallen trees and eating bark. At one time, she got a chunk of bark stuck in the roof of her mouth and had a terrible time getting that out because she really wouldn't open her mouth wide enough for me to get my hand in there and pull this piece of bark out.
Huh.
After that, I finally did get the bark out of the roof, out from the roof of her mouth, and I talked to our vet about it, and the vet suggested maybe a muzzle. So I went and bought a muzzle, and I put it on her so that she could still drink water while she was outside, but she wouldn't be able to eat the bark. And that was a pretty sad experience to see the dog running around the backyard, just scooting her face into the dirt, trying to tear at this muzzle with her front paws, trying to get the muzzle off of her face. And that lasted about 5 minutes. I says, well, we're just going to have to deal with the bark. I'm not going to put a muzzle on my dog. So
I
did muzzle off. She just looked so sad, and she came up and just sat next to me like, please take this muzzle
aww.
Off.
It's, so, it's hard. There's a lot of these side treatments as well, too, as you're saying, I'm sorry, that, you know, a lot of times people don't understand, you know, that these different side effects of the medication and that are also things that you have to be on the lookout for. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. I was I just stopped using the muzzle. The muzzle lasted about 5 minutes, and I just said, well, I can't do this to my dog, so we're just going to have to try to monitor a little bit better when she's out running around in the backyard and trying to keep her away from the rotten wood and the fallen trees and so forth. So, but yes, yeah, you're right. The dogs get very hungry, and they can act like a drunk old lady until their body gets more used to the new medication.
Now, speaking of monitoring, I also found it interesting that you did something I did as well with Gibson. If I wasn't in the room with him, I used a baby monitor to keep an ear on him while he was sleeping. And I know you said you did the same with Molly. And when Gibson was younger, all five sibs, as Robert knows, we used to talk about this in the beginning when they were younger, they had their own bedroom in my house and they had crates in our room off of the family room, and it had an air conditioner and a fan, and, you know, we had little music in there for them. And, again, I just want to do a little sidebar on that for crates, because some people, you know, there's a lot of different people say, oh, crates, this or that. But it is actually a very safe environment when our huskies love their crates. That became their little nest, their little den. And with an epileptic dog, when you go out, it's also very safe for them, because if they have a seizure when you're not home, and there are a lot of folks I know who worked. I worked at the time when Gibson first started out of the home, and you know, he was in a crate, and that way, you know, if anything should go wrong, they're safe in their own environment. The other dogs can't get him, because sometimes the other dogs get confused as well if it's a multi-dog household, and they could, out of fear, try to attack the seizing dog. So if the dog is running through the house and there happens to be things up on an end table or electrical cords, they could possibly get wrapped in them or something fall down and hurt them. So it actually is a very safe environment if they're, you know, trained right to appreciate and really like it. And as you said earlier with Molly, make it a friendly place. But I did put a room monitor in with him. And fast forward a few years, they all eventually started sleeping without crates, and the monitor stayed, though, wherever he was. If I stepped outside, the monitor stayed with him if he was inside. And a few years ago, after he started having some serious issues with hind end weakness, which was a side effect that plagued him for years because of his medications, I did move him out of the crate and onto a waterbed close by. And only then could I retire the baby monitor, because he was right by me. But can you talk a little bit about, like, your reasoning for putting that baby monitor with Molly?
Well, Molly was in a different part of the house than a bedroom. I got a two-story house here, and Her crate was a ways away from the bedroom on the second floor, and it seemed like most all of her seizures were at night.
Uh-huh.
And I've since read that, yeah, that's true. Most seizures do occur at night when the dog's brain is asleep. and all of a sudden this electrical storm starts up in their head that they've got no control over. The thought, I guess, is that when they're busy during the day, they're less likely to have a seizure than they are when they're sleeping at night. So I wanted to be sure that I could get to Molly when she needed my help and get this Valium in her so that we could try to limit her seizure or clusters of seizures to maybe a couple. So I put the transmitter next to her crate, and the receiver was on my nightstand. And when she would always, it seemed like she was always starting her clusters of seizures with a scream. And when I heard that scream over the baby monitor, I would wake my wife up, and we'd grab our Valium kit and head for Molly's crate. We'd try to get the Valium in her as soon as we could. Sometimes she was already starting on a second seizure by the time we got there, but hopefully we could get the Valium in her after the second seizure, and hopefully that would prevent a third or a fourth. It didn't always, but most of the time it did, and most of her seizures were at night. There were a couple times when she had seizure during the day. My wife was walking her on one afternoon while I was trying to do some crate cleanup. The potassium bromide gave the dog a problem of quite often she'd lose control of her her bladder and her bowels when she was having the potassium bromide medication. And my wife was walking her on a neighboring lot that had a gravel driveway, and she had a seizure right there in the middle of the afternoon, and actually just kind of fell down in the gravel driveway, and with her legs thrashing around, and she kind of made like a snow angel, but it was a dog angel in the gravel. These seldom did she have a seizure in the middle of the day, but she did have some, and I wasn't close to the kit. You just kind of had to let her lay there on the ground and go through a couple of seizures. And, well, I ran for the kit, but I didn't always know that they were coming.
Right. Now, for folks just tuning in, you're listening to the Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio. This month, on March 26th, is Purple Day for Epilepsy, and we are discussing canine epilepsy awareness. On this episode, my co-host Robert Fordo and I are chatting with Willard Moore, founder of the Molly's Canine Epilepsy Outreach and Molly's Fund. Willard had adopted an English setter, Molly, who soon began having seizures. After Molly's passing, Willard carried on an awareness movement to help educate others on dogs with seizures and volunteers his time by setting up informational booths at various events. He also volunteers with the North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine, where a fund is set up in Molly's name for canine epilepsy studies and projects through the Department of Clinical Sciences Companion Animal Epilepsy under Dr. Karen Munena, professor of neurology and author, and Julie Nedefi, licensed veterinary tech, research specialist, and author. Willard, the medications ultimately did not actually help control her seizures, did they? How bad did they get?
Well, Molly's seizures, they did get pretty bad at times. Our veterinarian told us that I couldn't kill my dog with Valium, so if I need to get two or three doses of Valium in her to try to break the seizure cycle, that would be okay. And there were times when Molly actually had a cluster of five seizures in a row.
Uh-huh.
One of the first times that happened, I did call our regular veterinarian and told them what was going on, and they directed me to the specialty hospital. They said, Willard, we can't help your dog at this point. Take her on over there. And I guess they got an IV into her with some Valium to help settle things down. But the Valium seemed to be the thing that we needed the most to break this seizure cycle. Most of the time, Molly's seizures came in clusters of three. I'd get the Valium in her after the second one by the time I got to her, and then hopefully the third one wouldn't come, and that would be the end of that. But there were times when she'd have as many as five and needed a couple doses of this Valium. So it was kind of a tough road there for a while.
Right. Now, I know, you know, it's hard for, I think, some people who may be first starting to do this or even those who aren't aware of what life with a dog with seizures is like. But in between her seizures, what was her life like? Was she a happy dog? Did she have any favorite activities or pastimes?
Molly was, she seemed to be a pretty happy dog when she was in not having seizures. I said that her seizure cycles came in about every 2 weeks. And in the meanwhile, she was a pretty happy dog. We had a lot of fun going for walks. I'd take her out to a local park, county park, and we'd go for walks in the park. English setters being hunters, they're always wanting to sniff and find a scent or chase something down. And when we'd go out to the county park, there was always something new to sniff. I entered Molly, enrolled her in obedience class, we were at the top of her class. We were right up there at the top of the class. I, of course, being retired, had a little bit more time to spend training her than other folks may have had, but we did quite well, and we were really pleased with her performance and her ability to learn. Molly and I were pals.
Yeah, it's such an important, I think, message I know we both want to drive home that, yes, you know, there are resources and there are difficult times, but there is something unique about the bond that you form as well. And, you know, I have fours, I love them too, but there is such a bond because you are always together. You are listening for them. You are helping them through tough times. But these dogs in between, I really think it's harder on the parents. The dog, when they bounce back, you know, and each one is a little different. Some might bounce back within a couple hours. Some it might take a couple days, some even a little longer. But in between, these dogs, they're happy. If you look at the dog, they're out there doing what a dog does best. They're enjoying life. They're having fun. They're sniffing. They're playing. There are dogs who are sled dogs, you know, dogs who do dock diving, do hiking. So, you know, I think it's really important for folks to know that in between the seizures, these dogs can really and do really enjoy their life. But like I said, I think it's harder on the parent because, you know, we worry and we're concerned. But, you know, I learned a lot from Gibson, and I just learned that, you know, no matter what you're faced with, you know, you just seize life and you go for it. It sounds like you had the same from Molly as well.
Yeah, I kind of wonder from time to time what it might have been like having a seizure. They don't really know what's going on, but if you've laid in bed at night and just kind of stretched out a little bit and gotten a Charlie horse in your leg, you know how badly that hurts. And I can't imagine a dog whose body completely knots up while they're having a seizure and how sore they must be when they come out of that. And when Molly got out of a cluster of seizures, she was kind of mopey all day long, and I can imagine how much her body must have hurt. Sometimes she was mopey for a couple of days. So that's something I think about from time to time, how bad it would hurt if your entire body went into a Charlie horse.
Mm. Now, from what I understand, Molly began when she began to have her cluster seizures, they kept getting worse, and unfortunately the time did come when you needed to help release Molly. You also decided to donate some of her blood for studies. Where and how did you come to this decision, and how did that help with the studies of canine epilepsy?
Well, when we first started to learn about idiopathic canine epilepsy, one of the best resources that we found on the internet was the Canine Epilepsy Resources site put out there by the EPIL-K9 Foundation. And in trying to read as much and learn as much as we could from that website, we also learned that the EPIL-K9 Foundation was funding a research project at NC State University in the genetics department. And I decided that I wanted to make a donation of Molly's blood to this important research. As it turned out, I made that donation after her death. She had a really bad cluster of seizures on December 4th of 2006. It started about 3 o'clock in the morning. I finally got her settled down, and I went to bed about 4:30. I got up the next day, and she'd had more seizures after I put her to bed. I came downstairs about 7 or 7:30 in the morning, and it was pretty evident that Molly had had some more bad seizures. I had called up our vet and had a talk with our vet and told her that things just weren't working out for Molly, and it was pretty hard on us. And I thought it was best that I just have the vet put her to sleep. And the vet agreed. She knew what I'd been going through and what the dog had been going through. So after I got her cleaned up, that was our last ride together. And before the vet euthanized her, I asked the vet to draw five cc's of blood so that we could make a blood donation to this important research over at the NC State University. I met with the researcher the very next day and donated Molly's blood to her. She thanked me for the blood sample and told me that there were only two English setters in her study, and her name was Miss Erin Kennerly. And her project, she was trying to find a genetic marker that might indicate whether a dog would be responsive or not to phenobarbital. And that's what her project was all about. And that was the project that the Apple K9 Foundation had been funding.
Now, if anyone wants some information on the Apple K9 Foundation, they also have the Apple K9 list, which is a wonderful email list, and it's a wonderful network to be part of. You can find this and more information out about them over at www.k9-epilepsy.com. Willard, how old was she? And after Molly's passing, what made you decide to begin the awareness campaign?
Well, from the information that I got from the animal shelter, Molly missed her fifth birthday by about 6 weeks. And from what we've read so far, that if a dog's going to have epilepsy, it'll show up by the fifth birthday. So I guess that held true for our situation here. After I had Molly euthanized the following spring, I decided that perhaps more people could make blood donations or make a contribution one way or another. So I decided to start a little campaign, a little crusade to try to bring that important research to the attention of the public or anybody else who might be able to make that donation. And with Ms. Kennerly's permission, I photocopied her website and started going around to different events in the area that I'd heard about. This was something brand new to me. I'd never struck out on anything like this before, strike out on a course and maintain that. One of the first events that we went to in the spring of 2007 was something called the Super Retriever Series. I believe it was being filmed for television. One of the major outdoor channels also at that venue was a Doc Dog series, and I talked with the organizers at each event, and they allowed me to put some of the research information on the registration table. So that was my start. I don't have many notes from the early parts of Molly's crusade, but that's how we got started.
Now, for folks just tuning in again, you're listening to the Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio. This month, on March 26th, is Purple Day for Epilepsy, and we are discussing canine epilepsy awareness. On this episode, my co-host Robert Fordo and I are chatting with Willard Moore, founder of the Molly's Canine Epilepsy Outreach and Molly's Fund. Willard had adopted an English setter, Molly, who soon began having seizures. After Molly's passing, Willard carried on an awareness movement to help educate others on dogs with seizures and volunteers his time by setting up informational booths at various events. He also volunteers with the North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine, where a fund is set up in Molly's name for canine epilepsy studies and projects through the Department of Clinical Sciences Companion Animal Epilepsy, and that's under Dr. Karen Munena, professor of neurology and author, and also Julie Nedefee, a licensed veterinary tech research specialist and author. Willard, how did you connect with Dr. Munena and Julie Nedefee from North Carolina State?
Well, I think it was sometime late 2007, maybe early 2008, I decided that I wanted a little bit more information about canine epilepsy research than what I'd had from Ms. Kennerly. So I was in touch with the Canine Health Foundation and asked them to provide me with literature on canine epilepsy research that they had been funding. I also had some information from the EpoCanine Foundation, and I thought surely there must be something going on over at the College of Veterinary Medicine at NC State University. So I called over there and told the switchboard operator that I was interested in talking with somebody that might be able to help me out with information on canine epilepsy research. The switchboard operator patched me right through to Dr. Munena's office, and I ended up speaking with Julie Nedefee Osborne, and that was probably one of the most important phone calls I've made in recent history. Julie told me that, yes, they do canine epilepsy research there at the college. They would be very happy to provide me with literature on the research, both past and ongoing. And Julie started providing me with lots of good information on what was going on at the College of Veterinary Medicine. So that's looking for more information on canine epilepsy research. That was a very important phone call.
Now, they've been doing some really amazing research and clinical studies over there. How does Molly's Fund help?
Well, Molly's Fund was announced in the spring or the winter of 2009. In 2008, Julie asked me if I could put together a story about Molly's time here at my house, and that would be something that they would be real interested in at the College of Veterinary Medicine. So I did, and I turned that over to her. She then fashioned that into an article that was printed in the College of Veterinary Medicine magazine, winter edition, 2009. That was Molly's story, and that particular story also announced Molly Seizure Studies Fund. That kind of got me off the ground. I'd never had anything like that happen to us before, and that's big medicine. When a College of Veterinary Medicine announces a fund, seizure studies research fund in your dog's name. So that was a real big medicine for us, and it helped give us some recognition, some presence when we'd go out to these dog events. That would be something that I could help collect money for. So that was a big point and a very important time in our crusade.
Oh, absolutely, and what an honor to Molly and canine epileptic dogs across the board. You've been doing the outreach now for 10 years, and what types of things have you seen that has changed or stayed the same during this period of time with talking to people about canine epilepsy?
Well, this spring starts our 10th year. Something that a lot that's changed has been possibly new medications and clinical studies that have been offered by pharmaceutical companies out there at the College of Veterinary Medicine. One thing that has stayed the same is the sadness, and the stories are quite the same when I talk to people who've got dogs with canine epilepsy, and it's always the same thing. Fortunately, for some folks, like Gibson, maybe medication has helped and the seizure cycles have broken, and they're in a lot better position than they were before they started medicine. And for a lot of folks, that hasn't happened yet. So that's part of what Molly's Canine Epilepsy Fund does, is it helps me get around to different places and gives us a presence when we're talking about this.
Now, do you think that generally folks realize a dog can live a happy life, even with seizures? Or what do you think is the biggest misconception they have about canine epilepsy?
Well, I think a lot of folks don't want to talk about it, and they don't want to go. There are quite a few folks that I've talked to that they're not really sure whether a veterinarian can help them or not, and they just kind of keep it to themselves. So I think there are probably a lot of folks out there who could learn a lot and just by asking questions, yeah, and picking up some information from places like our tables.
Now, how far and why do you travel with Molly's outreach booth, and what's up next for you?
Well, I try to stay within the county. I donate all my own time and mileage. I try to stay within Wake County here. I've been out to Chatham County and down to Lee County. The next event that's coming up will be this coming week right here in Raleigh, North Carolina. There's going to be a cluster of dog shows. These are confirmation shows, five days in a row. And I've been allowed to have a information station set up at the dog shows out there. So people can come to town from out of state, spend 5 days at the dog shows, possibly win five blue ribbons from five different judges. And that's going to be our next venue. And that's coming up Wednesday.
Wednesday, all right. Now, with March 26th being Purple Day for epilepsy, what is it you hope people will think of when they think of Epi dogs?
I hope that they can. I hope that they can realize that information is pretty special. One thing that they can do if they've got an Epi dog is first off seeing your veterinarian to get some help that way. And the College of Veterinary Medicine, Julie has a site set up where you can register your dog as an epileptic dog. And when clinical trials come down the road that are being sponsored by pharmaceutical companies or some other clinical trial pops up, they'd like to be able to, and they have to have dogs in a big hurry for the deadlines on these things, by being able to access dogs and dog owners through this online registry, it helps them out a whole lot. So people should be in touch with their veterinarians and the College of Veterinary Medicine so they can be more aware of what's going on there for their own sake.
Right, exactly. Now, what was the most surprising thing that you learned about canine epilepsy with Molly?
I think the idea that a dog can have a good day as well as a bad day. And hopefully the good days will outnumber the bad days. And with the new medications and treatments that are available, this will make a big difference in the life of the dogs and their owners.
And how important do you feel it is for a family who has a dog with seizures to network with other Epi dog families, specialists, you know, the college? I know for me that was a critical thing, and I'm sure you feel the same way.
Well, I think sharing information and being in touch with your veterinarian is quite important. Being in touch with other folks is important. And I can tell you a happy ending story here. At a dog show, a series of dog shows back in 2010, it was hound shows, confirmation shows. At the end of the second day, everybody was packing up. And a fella came over to Molly's table as I was putting away literature, and he asked me if I thought there'd ever be a cure for canine epilepsy. And I told him, surely people are working on it, and you can bet as soon as they find something, we'll all know about it. So I gave him some information from our table, And he told me about an American foxhound that he had at home that sounded like his dog was as bad off as my Molly. Phenobarbital, potassium bromide, and continued to have clusters of grand mal seizures. He took some literature and went away, and I didn't think I'd ever see the man again. Most of the folks that take literature, you never know what happens to that literature. But I did see this fellow about 6 months later at another dog show. And I walked up to him and asked him, say, how's that American foxhound of yours getting along? And he told me that with the information that he had taken from Molly's table and the help of his veterinarian, his foxhound was on a new medication and doing much better, thank you. And that is the best story that I have. Over 9 years, is that Molly's table has helped somebody.
That is really wonderful. I mean, you know, you've had so many proud accomplishments in her name, from the outreach and fund program, you know, to helping this person, and I'm sure there are others that maybe you haven't even heard of. Now, I know a very popular question I hear, and I'm sure you do too, is my dog had a seizure, what do I do? And I always do say go to the vet first so he can perform some tests to rule out whether or not it's caused by an underlying health issue such as a tumor or other illness, and then go from there as to whether or not to medicate or wait and see, which again is, you know, at the suggestion of the vet if another seizure should arise. And I so agree. I'm very fortunate in that I have a wonderful veterinarian team. I always tell them if I move, I have to move their practice with us, because they were just absolutely wonderful with Gibson. And you know, I attribute a lot of what they did and their guidance along the way with, I feel, Gibson's a success story because of living 7 years without a seizure. And, you know, in the end, it was not canine epilepsy. But, you know, sometimes dogs do get mystery seizures, and they never get another. There are so many possible triggers, and folks should also keep a journal, as we said, you know, to mark down the time and length and details of the seizure to discuss with their vet, and indicate that what the dog had to eat or was doing prior to, as we stated before. And Willard, what message would you like folks, you know, to leave with, or leave your booth with, or even leave our show today, who are finding themselves on this journey with their dogs?
Well, absolutely. Be in touch with your veterinarian if you got any problems. I visited a rescue booth for dachshunds here a couple of years ago, and a lady and was telling them about Molly's Crusade and outreach program. The lady who was the head of this dachshund rescue told me that she had a dachshund that was constantly having seizures, but they found out that the poor little dog had a tumor on its brain. So epilepsy medicine, she wasn't sure that was going to help, but it seemed to be keeping things under control, because she certainly didn't have the money to have the dog operated on. Another case, I spoke with somebody who was playing Frisbee with her border collie in the backyard. They threw the Frisbee a little bit too close to her husband's pickup. The dog bounced off the side of the pickup trying to get the Frisbee, and from that time on, their dog had seizures. It was some kind of trauma. So, yeah, be in touch with your veterinarian, and who can help you figure out what some of these problems may be, and find out whether you do indeed have idiopathic epilepsy or whether the seizures are being caused by something else.
Now, I know Robert has a couple questions, and I know we're wrapping up the show, but I did want to just mention that information about Willard and Molly's canine epilepsy outreach is going to be located on my upcoming fivesides.com website. I am going to be doing a piece on March 26 on Purple Day that will have, you know, of course, a link to the show and more information on the Live Gibbs Strong Canine Epilepsy Awareness and Molly's outreach program. And you can also currently find the information on the North Carolina State University CBM's website. It's on the Department of Clinical Sciences Companion Animal Epilepsy page. And this is a tad long of a URL, but it is https://cvm.ncsu.edu/research/labs/clinical-sciences /companion-animal-epilepsy. So hopefully, you know, you'll get to get over to that page. If not, you get lost at all, you can do a search on the university's website for Dr. Karen Munena, and it will also bring you to the clinical sciences page. Willard, is there any other way to get in touch with you, or is this the best way?
Well, I do have a website. I should say an email address, but the best way to be in touch with anybody about Molly's canine epilepsy outreach would be through the College of Veterinary Medicine, because that's where I pass the information on to anyway. So, they've just redone their website over there, and just go into a search box and type in NCSU. CVM, North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. I understand it's number 3 in the country, and I'm sure that you can find an answer there.
Right, and then again, if they would do a search for Dr. Karen Munena, I've been saying her name wrong, I'm sorry about that, or Julie Nedefe, that will also bring you to where you need to go, and I know Julie's really great with getting information to and from folks. I know, Robert, you're on the line. I know we're running a little over, but I know you had some questions for Willard as well.
Yes, actually it's for both of you, whichever could answer. First off, is there any damage that happens per seizure? I mean, is there a little piece of the brain or the electrical system that is damaged every time? You think about, you know, how a car might misfire and, you know, the spark plugs go bad or something like that in that kind of description. Is something like that happening with dogs, where a little piece of their brain is kind of shot each time they have a seizure?
I can't answer that question. I don't know. That would have to come from a clinician.
Right. I agree with Willard in that, you know, probably either Dr. Munena or Julie would be good for answering that question. What I can answer is this. It did not affect Gibson's brain in that manner. However, the reasons for trying to get these seizures under control right away and why Willard goes and gets the Valium and you try to do everything immediately is because you don't want the dog subjected to these seizures, because they can have an adverse effect on the dog's brain, and if it goes on too long, also other organs as well. So the key is to keep those seizures under control. I know a lot of people will do a wait and see. It really needs to be under your veterinarian guidance. I think we both stress you have to have a good relationship with your veterinarian. They have to be well-versed on canine epilepsy. If not, have them recommend a veterinarian neurologist, because the key is to get those under control, because you don't want them to keep happening, because then it does open the dog up to having some serious damage. Really, you don't want them to have as many seizures as you can possibly help them.
The second question just occurred to me when you guys were talking about the Valium treatments. You know, I've been in dogs for more than 25 years and with sled dogs since 94. So I've had a lot of dogs and a lot of medicines over the years. But it never occurred to me until this morning if dogs can become addicted or codependent to drugs. And, you know, when Willard was talking about Molly having these very often Valium treatments, I wonder if dogs can get addicted like people do to drugs like Valium or painkillers, et cetera. And if they do, I wonder if they have the same sort of withdrawals and sicknesses to drugs like people do. Have you guys ever heard of that? Again, I've never thought about it in 25-odd years of dogs.
Willard, do you want to take that first?
Well, I haven't heard about it, and the idea that our veterinarian told me that Molly could take several doses of this liquid Valium and it wouldn't kill her. The next day after she had a cluster of seizures, she was usually kind of bad off, and like I said, I don't know whether that was because her whole body was knotted up like a Charlie horse in your leg, or whether the Valium was successful in breaking the cluster of seizures, but gave her sort of a hangover the next day. I don't know enough about the drug itself to be able to say, but when her seizure clusters were about 2 weeks apart, they didn't seem to be coming back for the sake of needing more Valium. So I really don't know if that's a good answer to your question. That's pretty much just a guess on my part.
I know I'm going to actually send this over to Julie because I think it's a very interesting question. Now, dogs, of course, can't help themselves if they are feeling an addiction. They would not be able to go out and feed that addiction because they're not capable because they're dependent upon us. I am going to ask her because, like I said, it's interesting. But what I can say about Gibson, I find, again, like Willard, you know, I find side effects from the medication. When he had his seizures, of course, you know, like he said, did it come from the wear and tear of the body? I think some of it was from the medication, you know, but I found him to get sick. You know, Gibson, he actually vomited quite a bit once he was put on medication. It was not unusual for him to eat dinner later on. He would take himself off the deck, and he'd go find somewhere in the yard. Usually he tried to hide, whether it was behind the tree or under the deck ramp, and he would dig himself a hole and vomit. And I always had to go out and search so that I would know whether or not, you know, how soon he vomited, whether he vomited up his medicines, whether he needed another dose of medicine, you know, also whether or not I needed to try to feed him later. So I did find that he wound up having, you know, getting sick from them occasionally. And again, I don't know, I don't think that answers your exact question, but I don't think Willard or I can answer that question, but we'll definitely get an answer for you on that. But, you know, again, I think it was more side effects from either the seizure or the seizure medication that we did notice with them.
Right. And, you know, I bring that up because, you know, dogs are so close to us in terms of, you know, the way our systems work. A lot of research is done, unfortunately, or maybe even fortunately, on dogs before it is done on people because our systems are so close. But it would just find very interesting if a dog would go through withdrawal, you know, et cetera, from high doses or long doses of pain medication, very similar. You know, you see the shows on TV with folks that are coming off opiates like heroin or morphine or something like that, and they come very dependent on those. And, you know, they get very sick and have withdrawal symptoms, et cetera. And I've just never heard of that in dogs. And I think it's a very interesting question. I'm sure there's research been done on it, but it's just something that popped into my mind listening to the show. And I would definitely like to hear the answer. I'm sure a lot of other folks would as well, because so many dogs are on long-term, long-term care for medications. And, of course, a lot of times we have to switch medications because the therapeutic effect doesn't work anymore. You have to give more doses or a different medication because it's, you know, sort of worked its way through the system and you know, it no longer works. So I'm
right.
Definitely interested in that. Otherwise, Willard,
want to just put a little sidebar
go ahead.
On your question there, Robert. The other thing, too, with medication, and I said because dogs can't help themselves to the medication, you know, they do rely on us. It is really, I actually emphasized the point, and I was probably extremely rigid in my schedule with him. It was very important for him to have his medication 12 hours apart. You know, and I know a lot of times that's difficult for people who are not home or they have to, you know, a lot of times they have to arrange for a neighbor or a family member to come, but that is very critical for them to get that medication on the prescribed times, which will also hopefully help in assisting in managing the seizures. Not all dogs it does, but once you get them on a protocol, that is a very important part, you know, is to make sure that their medications are, you know, dosed to them at the right times.
Right. And, you know, I don't know how many times I've been on antibiotics for one thing or another, and I forget doses or forget to take them at a certain time or don't finish them. So I can imagine if your dog is on a medication that potentially saves their life, how important that medication schedule is. Because as people, you know, we often forget. You know, we have such busy lives nowadays that, you know, taking a pill often, unfortunately, is kind of a, you know, a second thought or a, you know, a side thought.
Right, or you just take it when you come back home or whenever.
Right.
But, yeah, with the dog, it's it is. It's more critical for them. And I know my family knows we used to, everything we planned, it was always planned around Gibson's medication schedule. And I know a lot of epidural parents do the same thing. And I knew, well, if we went out, he also had supplements throughout the day and different therapies. So, his phenobarbital were 12 hours apart. He had potassium bromide was with the phenobarbital at dinner time. So in between, though, I had him on various supplements that he needed to be sure that he got that helped with his side effects, which were weakness in his hind end. Sorry, my brain's going so far ahead of my speaking, but it is very important. So it would be, okay, we have a three-hour window here. We have to make sure we're back for Gib. And, we always, that is so important, where I think for us as humans, while we should stick to a schedule, sometimes if we're a couple hours late, we go home, we catch up on our antibiotic schedule or our vitamin schedule. But when you have a dog that's epileptic, you really can't do that. If at all possible, you should try to stick to the prescribed schedule for their, for their benefit.
Right. Well, I do want to thank Willard for being on today. Such great information, and I applaud your work. And, this is the first I have heard of the Molly Foundation. Congratulations on that. I know it's been going very strong for several years, so keep up the good work. You guys, both you and Dorothy, do such good for passing along the word on this. All of us have little causes or whatever that we go after, and all of us are so passionate about those, and I just want to applaud both of you guys for doing that, because I'm sure you've helped so many over the years, and it's always great to hear the happy outcomes, for sure.
And, Robert, I'd just like to say to our listening audience to please remember to dress your pet in something purple, wear purple, turn your social media purple. While on March 26th, don't forget to link up to our Purple Day blog hop and media share. And, if they listen earlier on, they can get that information. It's also over on fivesibes.blogspot.com, and I have it all over our Five Sibes Facebook page. The website badge is on our social media sites. And, if you folks want to go ahead and share photos on our Facebook page, over on the Facebook Purple Day event page, please do. We want to see your dogs. Put them in a purple collar, a purple bandana. If you have a photo program, make the photo purple, but we would love you to share them all with us. You can start now, right up through the 26th. And Willard, I know Molly's extremely proud of you and all the wonderful work that you do, and mine and Gibson's message will always be to live Gib strong, because we believe dogs with canine epilepsy can and do live happy lives, no matter how long or short that life is. And Robert, that's it for us today. Willard, thank you so much for being on our show. Really appreciate it. And I know we'll be talking more, and we're going to have to talk to Julie about Robert's question.
Yeah, that's a great Very idea. Good. I thought about those questions. I know that over the past 9 years, I've talked to some human epileptics who had no idea that dogs had the same problems, and I've heard some stories. One guy told me that he decided to go off his medicine for a day when he went out to get some pizza and beer with his buddies, and after he got to the parking lot, he parked his car, and next thing you know, he found himself down on the ground having a seizure because he decided to skip his medicine.
Oh, my goodness.
I've talked to a lot of people, and thank you very much for the invitation to be part of your program today.
Thrilled to have you on, and once again, thank you for all the work that you do, in Molly's name and for canine epilepsy. Robert?
Very quickly, Dorothy, who's next month, and what are we talking about?
Next month, we're going to welcome Joanne Sundell, the author of the Watch Eyes trilogy of books about Siberian Huskies. And the three books are Arctic Storm, Arctic Shadow, and her newest release that will be coming out April 20th, Arctic Will.
Very good, guys. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with